So, how do you pronounce your surname? Is it Gansel? Michael?
It's the German pronunciation would be Gensler, but it's not the most straightforward pronunciation Gensler. For Anglo-Saxons.
So. Well, I'd prefer to get
the... I realized it after coming here, so...
So, what? Tell me, you've been doing a lot of studies on sourdough. What are the mainstay of your work with sourdough?
I'm trying to do two things. The first is I'm trying to understand which species or which strains are in which sourdoughs.
Yeah.
Different bakers or industrial bakers maintain their sourdoughs in different ways. So one question that has been coming up repeatedly is why does one sourdough have one organism and another sourdough another one?
Okay.
That's one piece, and the second piece, a little bit more important, is how does the metabolism of the organism and the properties of the flour, how do they influence bread quality? In the broadest sense, we've done some things on taste and smell. We've done studies on texture, and we've done few studies that relate to the potential health benefits. We didn't really do the health benefits, but let's say potential health benefits. Yeah.
So, looking at sort of those studies that you've done, what are the main discoveries that you've come out with? What are the main pieces of the jigsaw puzzle that you've put together?
Let's start with the taste and this. Well, the main discoveries was one of the biggest stories was the exopolysaccharides. That's something where we started probably more than 15 years ago. And in the past 15 years have accumulated enough knowledge to understand how we can use these polysaccharides produced by bacteria to improve texture volume in some cases, but not in other cases. That's one example. Then let's start with a more recent version is we looked at taste. And we found that in a sourdough fermentation, because there are so many different amino acids, taste compounds are produced, the taste profile is a lot more complex when compared to a straight dough. And we can use that complexity to generate new flavors, but also to reduce salt. And we understand at least some of the microbial enzymes that are responsible for that complexity.
Okay, that sounds very interesting. For someone who is not a scientist, a baker,
if
you were describing what a polysaccharide is, what is it and what you know, if you were describing someone who didn't know what it was, what's the definition?
It's a polysaccharide which binds water at the dough stage before baking. And it's produced from sucrose or table sugar by the sourdough lactic acid bacteria. So we can use the sourdough lactic acid bacteria to bind a little bit more water at the dough stage. And if you look at the challenges in baking, the texture of the bread is mainly determined by starch.
Yeah.
So starch determines whether your bread is very soft or very hard. Mm-hmm. But starch at the dough is completely inactive. It's not hydrated. It doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
So the problem is to influence starch properties, which gelatinizes only during baking at the dough stage, where you really can influence starch. So these polysaccharides, which bind water at the dough, are important because they provide water to starch during baking so that starch can gelatinize and form a soft crumb, which doesn't stale very easily.
So that has quite serious implications for not using preservatives, for example. It would help preserve the dough.
It can replace some of the preservatives that are used to prevent staling, yes. I would think that if you look at the supermarket breads, the industrial bread, the list of ingredients that are meant to prevent staining is very long. I'm not confident. You would have to do a little bit advanced fermentation to replace all of them, but you can make the list a lot shorter, yes.
Right. And you were talking, when you first started going an overview, you were also talking about some of the potential health benefits from this research that you've done.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, can you summarise what the main potential health benefits are, and if any of those have been proven through what you've been doing?
There are no approved health benefits for sourdough, because the differences to the straight bread is always incremental. It's never a quantum leap, it's always an incremental benefit. How do I prioritize? Salt reduction is one, because you get improved taste, you need to add less salt.
Okay.
I think a big advantage is improved fiber content.
And is that the availability of the fiber?
It's the availability of the starch and the function of the fiber in baking. And one side of the coin is that your starch is more slowly digestible in a sourdough bread than it is in a straight dough bread.
And this is going, and this also ties in with Professor Terry Graham's work, doesn't it?
Dr. Whose work?
Terry Graham.
Yes, yeah. So we have a little bit slower starch digestibility, and some of the starch, well, behaves like fiber. The other side of the coin is that fiber-rich ingredients, let's say wheat bran or flaxseed flour or a few others, their performance in the baking process is a lot better if you ferment them with sourdough, which means the amount of bran that you can use in a recipe is a lot lower than the amount of bran that you can use if you ferment it with lactic acid bacteria. So it's two points: your starch changes, but also your fiber is a lot easier to use in baking. And I think that would be a main and a big influence. There are a few more applications. In specific applications, you can generate bioactive peptides. You can decrease the gluten content, but they're not as obvious and not as applicable to all sourdough breads.
Can I just ask you to stop for 1 second? Bioactive peptides, what are bioactive peptides?
Bioactive peptides are peptides that can reduce the blood pressure.
And when did you spot that there was bioactive peptides?
We and others have done studies where you can show that these peptides are produced in sourdough. That's not your average sourdough for leavening process, but if you optimize the fermentation with enzymes and strains, you can produce these bioactive peptides in the sourdough, and then you get a bread where you can expect that maybe the blood pressure is a little bit reduced.
And I'm making an assumption here. I'm assuming that's in the very long, slow fermentation that those biopeptides are produced.
That's a very long, slow fermentation, yes.
Do you know how many hours that was starting to produce that?
I think we fermented that for at least 2 days.
Okay, so sort of 48 hour, very sour.
Yeah.
And was that using normal wheat? So that was just using, or was that using a particular wheat?
We used whole wheat or rye malt, but whole wheat worked just fine.
That's really exciting. And they were being produced in a significant enough quantity to make a difference.
In our work, we didn't do any clinical trial, but we for the same peptides in dairy products, there is clinical trials available. So we thought that we have the same amount that you would expect to have activity, yes.
That's so exciting. that must have been quite a nice thing to discover. Yeah. I mean, it must have been. I mean, I would be really excited if I was discovering this. Available in there is studies showing that in dairy there is clinical that's a clinical evidence for that's these levels in dairy
for the same peptide in the same concentration.
That's amazing. Do you make bread, Michael? Do you bake?
I make my own bread. If you're a German living in Canada, you either drive on the...
starve to death.
Yes, or you make your own bread, yes.
Yeah, no, fair enough. So there's a personal interest here as well, isn't there? Yeah, you can see you've got a bit of passion in there. So that's really good. Just going back to what you said about the two bit different things, so I can understand this, that you've got improved taste, you've got salt reduction, okay? Yeah. So improved fiber content function from the fiber because some of the starch starts behaving more like fiber. But then you also talked about something I didn't quite understand, which was that the bran is taken up in a different way. Can you explain that a bit more to me? If you bake
a straight wheat bread with 10% wheat bran.
Yeah.
And you compare that to the same wheat bread without wheat bran. You will notice that addition of unfermented wheat bran decreases the volume of the bread quite a bit.
Yes.
If you do the same with fermented wheat bran.
Yeah.
You subject the wheat bran to a sourdough fermentation, you will note that the decrease of volume is a lot smaller.
Yes, because...
Or that you actually are able to increase or improve bread volume.
Right, so in actual fact, you're getting a lighter loaf with the wheat bran.
Yes, and that means if you use unfermented wheat bran, you add it to your straight dough and you always decrease volume and make
it... Yeah, it's always at the cost of the crumb.
Yes.
Yeah.
But if you make the fermented wheat bran, you can add without compromising quality. And that means the use of fiber, it's a lot easier than it is if you don't ferment.
Right. So, and that's easier to... So that in terms of fiber, that gives you more fiber to eat, basically, because you'll eat more of it.
Yeah. If you want to make a fiber-enriched bread and you're going to add wheat bran or add, you know, the same is true for flaxseed. If you use unfermented flaxseed, I think it's a terrible ingredient. But if you ferment it, it behaves very different.
By fermentation, you
can change, improve some of these fiber-rich ingredients to make them suitable for use.
And have you looked at the effect of, I don't know whether or not you've looked at the effect of phytic acid while you've been doing some of your studies?
That has been done a long time ago.
Okay.
Well, I started my science in sourdough on phytic acid.
Right.
I quickly found that it was in 1992, I think, or 1994. I quickly found that everything that has to be said has already been said.
Right, it was boring, was it?
and the short story is, if you add a little bit of acid to any wheat flour, you will quickly degrade phytic acid with the enzymes of the flour.
So it's the enzymes that actually design...
It's the enzymes of the flour plus acidity. So any sourdough bread will have a lower content of phytic acid.
Right, okay, that makes sense.
But I would, you know, if you look at the health problems of the population in Canada, and I assume the population in the UK, mineral deficiencies are not on the list.
Well, we do have mineral deficiencies in the UK, and there actually is a listing that we have mineral deficiencies. And the more that we, in fact, some of the studies that are being done at the moment are looking at wheat that takes up more minerals. Magnesium, I think, is one that we have a deficiency of in places. It depends on the population and what they're eating.
And what they already joke. Okay, so I'm not a nutritional scientist, but you know, if I read the pressing public health problems, I read about obesity, diabetes, inflammatory...
They're more pressing. They're definitely more pressing.
I don't read a lot about too many people being malnourished or getting ill because they don't have enough magnesium. Calcium is maybe a bigger problem.
Yeah.
But I think that's a general statement that the availability of minerals is a lot improved if you ferment with sourdough. But the effect is an effect of the acidity, not an effect of any specific metabolism of the lactics.
Just, Michael, going back to the fact that this it slows down the starch and it's behaving like fibre.
Yeah.
The starch is behaving like fibre. I know you've discovered that, but do you know what it is about sourdough that enables that to happen?
These studies I haven't done myself, but I know the literature, and the explanation is it's a combination of the presence of acid and gluten during baking, and the presence of more fiber. So if you want to produce, if you want to reproduce this effect in a bread system without organisms, you need a combination of lactic acid present during baking with gluten, and if you add any fiber or fiber-rich ingredient, the effect becomes a lot stronger.
So in actual fact, if you were making, when you want to make a loaf with starch that then behaves like fiber, you need some fiber in there in order to do that.
You need some fiber in there. Yeah. So if you see the effect with white wheat bread, but if you use whole wheat bread or wheat bread with added fiber or added bran, the effect is stronger.
Right.
And I rank breads. If you take a white pan bread, the glycemic index is 1.
Yeah.
It's very 100. Sorry, it's very easily digestible. On the opposite, if you take a whole grain sourdough rye bread, and my benchmark is pumpernickel, it's the German variety, but the Danish and Finnish and other people do something comparable, that glycemic index is 50, so it's less than half. So the digestibility of starch has changed fundamentally. And the difference is explained by use of sourdough, presence of acid, whole grains, average and a slow baking process. And I would be a little bit pressed to prioritize, but if you combine all 5 or all 4, sourdough, whole grains, high fiber, slow baking, you can decrease your glycemic index very substantially.
So you can decrease your glycemic index by how much?
You cut it in half.
And that is, so you're going from 1 to 50, and that is cutting it in half.
Yes.
And that, in terms of then blood sugar, help if you're diabetic, is going to help stabilize.
That will help. It helps stabilize the blood sugar, but it goes beyond that. Because your feeling of satiety is very different.
I missed that, Michael. You're what? You're...
The feeling of satiety is different.
Oh, the satiety.
The same amount of bread will, you'll get hungry later if you eat the low GI bread compared to the high GI bread.
Yeah.
Then you have all the repercussions that pertain to fiber and, many of the inflammatory diseases that link to the activity of the gut microbiome. But satiety and glycemic index would be the most direct and easy measurable outcomes of a low DI, high fiber product.
So my combination there is a whole grain sourdough using whole wheat and then really a very long slow fermentation to do that with.
Yeah.
And you think about a 48-hour fermentation.
In the case of pumpernickel, they have a slow baking process. I think they do a traditional 3-stage fermentation process. So that is not a very long fermentation. That's your traditional 3-stage fermentation process. So I don't think that the fermentation process is fundamentally different from what they would use in a white wheat bread.
Right. Okay. Okay. That sounds very interesting. And a lot of the people that come to me when I'm teaching, I have laid people with bowel cancer, I have people with diabetes, I have people who have trouble digesting their bread. So it's what they're asking and wanting to know is what I can't tell them this, but I can say that the indicators are that, that these kind of breads, when you're using this way of baking them, is you can halve it. So this one here, that the one that you halved with, that was a whole grain sourdough pumpernickel style bread.
Okay.
Going back to what you first were looking at, you were looking at these microbial enzymes and the difference in the way they behave. Do some of them, when you get your sourdough really acidic, and when it starts really swimming and you think there's a hooch on top, Does some of the yeast die at that point? Because I've noticed what you see every week, Michael, I have a clinic, and it's like being a doctor for sourdough, and people bring me these, you know, pots, and they come clutching their pots of starter and holding their bread.
Yeah.
And sometimes I have starters that smell amazing. They smell like fruit and apples and pineapple. They smell amazing. And I think, oh, I could almost eat it.
Yeah.
Then I get ones that smell like dirty old socks. And you're like, that's so disgusting. And then I get ones that smell like, oh, my God. What's this? Nail polish remover. Occasionally, I take the lid off one and I smell. And I think, quite frankly, that last week, I actually disintegrated all the hairs in my nostrils because I took a smell. And I was, oh, God, this is so horrible. I nearly fainted. And I wondered, what at different levels of acidity do the yeast, does it just, when it starts getting really acidic, do the yeast start dying?
No, the yeast don't die. To the opposite, the yeast actually are a little bit more acid tolerant than the lactics. So if you take your sourdough and you keep it for a long time, the yeast stay more active. And the fruity flavors, possibly also the dirty socks flavors, likely come from the fruity flavor almost certainly come from the yeast. And that matches our experience. If you take 10 different yeasts and put them in the same flour or in the same sourdough, they will give you a very different smell. And, you know, the students in the lab or myself, if you smell it, you can tell the yeast by the smell. The problem is that if you take, if you maintain a sourdough for leavening, which means you have your 2-3 refreshments every day, then you get a very active sourdough.
Yeah.
But if you keep it, if you ferment it for a very long time,
yeah.
Then this organism starts to become inactive.
Yeah.
And if you put them into your bread dough, you have a lot of acidity, but not a lot of leavening power.
Yeah.
And that is, if you use no other leavening agent, that's not very good.
No.
And that's where I distinguish, because what you see in industry, and what much of what we do, is we use sourdough as an ingredient.
Yeah.
So you have your wheat flour and your baker's yeast and your salt and everything, and then 5, 10, 20% fermented something is an ingredient.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't always use it for leavening. Whereas if you use the artisanal or the hobby bakers, they are more likely to use the sourdough for leavening.
I teach sourdough with leavening, and what I actually do, Michael, is I have two pots in my fridge. I call one the mother and the other one the grandmother. And when I make my sourdough, if I want a really flavoursome sourdough, I leaven with, I raise the bread with a leaven that is made from a fresh, sweet mother. And then to get really good flavour, I pour some of my old acidic grandmother in.
Oh, that's a little bit...
So I get the best of all possible worlds. I get all the flavour... And all that deliciousness, as well as the leavening ability.
Yeah. But here I think getting the leavening power and the right flavor depends on how you control the fermentation.
Okay.
But what is true for all sourdough processes that leaven without baker's yeast, you need to refresh very often. Either refresh twice a day and then you ferment very cool at 16 or less, or you refresh 3 or 4 times a day and then you ferment between 20 and 30 degrees centigrade.
I do both. I refresh overnight in the kitchen, which sits at about 18 degrees, 17, 18 degrees. I leave that overnight. I actually make my bread with my water. I come in with my water about 30 degrees. It drops down, and then my dough, I keep it around about 24 degrees while it ferments.
Yeah.
So exactly what you're just saying.
Yeah. And then if you use the sourdough for leavening, I think most of the other questions are secondary, because if you use the sourdough as an ingredient, you can select strains for flavor, for better texture, for whatever. But if you ferment the sourdough for leavening, you know, the necessity to get sufficient leavening power dictates how you propagate, and that dictates which organisms are there.
That's very true. So then the question becomes, Michael, when I have a very active sourdough starter, and she's, I mean, if you see mine right now, she's like, woo, she's in the pot and she's bubbling and vivacious and gorgeous.
Yeah.
So only certain organisms will survive in that.
In a sourdough used for leavening, you have almost in all places of the world the same organisms. And that's not a question of survival, that's a question of fast growth. Because if you refresh very often, then you select the organisms which grow fast. And that's one of five species of Lactobacillus, one is most likely, and a few different yeasts. But that's pretty consistent.
Do you have a list of those?
I have a list of those, yes. But that has been reasonably well researched. So since a couple of years, there is some consensus. Yeah.
So if you then ferment it really, really slowly, and you just leave this kind of bubbling mass of craziness in a pot, just kind of a pot of like your sour old grandma, and you keep adding in there very slowly, you get a more complex amount of yeast that are actually allowed to bubble away in there.
I would think the complexity of the organism decreases. Because if by the time your sourdough starts to be 10, 15 years old, I understand that that's 15 years with constant feeding once or twice a day, you're probably down to no more than 2 yeasts and no more than 4 lactic acid bacteria. The likelihood is that you're having 1 yeast and 2 or 3 lactobacilli.
And does that limit your flavor?
Not necessarily. Because the flavor is also an interaction with the ingredients. And if I tell you, we spoke about pumpernickel, and the pumpernickel has essentially the same organisms on the species level, not on the strain level, but at the species level, the organisms are the same as in a panettone, your fluffy Italian sweet wheat bread. So you can get very different flavors with the same organisms. Yeah.
Wow. Is there any benefit in keeping one that's more, you know, that you're not refreshing all the time, that you keep, is there any benefit to getting one with a bit more diversity in there? Is that where all the fruitiness comes from?
It's possible that your what you call grandmother really is a different fermentation style, and you get, because it's kept and fermented differently, you get a different yeast in there. So there can be benefit of mixing 2 different sourdoughs, because in this case you actually increase the complexity of organisms.
That explains why I get better flavor when I use my grandmother.
So I would not be surprised that if the grandmother, which stays in the fridge for a long time, and the mother, which is kept active all the time, I would not be surprised if they have different yeasts and different lactobacilli, and if you mix them at the bread stage, you can increase the complexity.
Microbiota.
You can call it microbial community. That would be better digestible for somebody who's not a scientist.
So, and that will maybe help with the digestion.
The organisms don't make much of a difference in the digestion. Their metabolic activity and the conversion of the wheat components during fermentation influences the digestibility. Yeah.
Right, so it's exactly the same. It's just the flavor aspect and the flavor component, which is why my grandma has become so precious.
Yeah,
it's funny because I have 2 different pots. I have a really old, like, 100-year-old pot that I keep. I'll fetch it in a second. I'll show it. And she's, I mean, I take it with me when I go to places.
Yeah.
No, hang on. I'm just going to pause this because.